Hello, everyone. Welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here, sitting with
Gabriel
Borud. We have received lots and lots and lots of your emails over the last roughly 10 days. I think they've kind of been stacking up on us. We've been printing them out.
We've printed a couple of them out, and we're going to read them out and talk about them.
So our first one, very first one here, comes
this
from...
This one's from Horatio? Or Horacio? You know Spanish.
I do, or did, is probably more accurate. Horacio Jaramillo is how I would pronounce that.
Wow.
With my sort of Central American Spanish. Of course, Spanish. Horacio.
Can I try? Horacio? Oh,
that's Spanish.
Oh.
You're doing good there. So he is from Colombia, which is why I think it's Horacio. Says, I love your show. May I ask you for a question or for an answer here? He said, before the pandemic, I started training for a triathlon. Very cool for you, by the way, Horacio. I think that's awesome. However, I stopped swimming during the pandemic and still have not started yet, even though I got the first vaccine and am waiting to get my second shot by the end of October. I'm afraid to start swimming because I might get infected. The question is, can you get infected through water that you might swallow? Now, thank you, Horacio, for having such a specific question there.
Yeah, and a specific question that we actually had answered at the beginning of the pandemic. I believe last April 2020, we went over to Bonn University to Martin Exner.
Martin Exner has been looking at hygiene questions here in Germany. He's one of those people who speaks to the German government and advises them on exactly these kinds of things. And last April, his answer was totally clear.
Yep.
It's safe.
He encouraged us to go swimming.
So chlorine...
In a swimming pool, in a lake, anywhere you want. It's fine.
The amount of chlorine that you have in swimming pools is not arbitrary. They haven't just chosen a random number and you dump a bottle of chlorine in and see what happens. That number is there so that any viral or bacterial infection that could be transmitted through the water is gone within 30 seconds. And 30 seconds would be the longest that it could stay in there.
We then also asked Martin, what about swimming in the lake? And he said, based on the volume in that water, the risk is absolutely negligible.
Yeah. And I say this as someone who went swimming at an indoor swimming pool on Saturday with my family. And at least the way they're doing this in Germany is that it's no longer a free-for-all. You know, as many people who want to show up and go swimming can do it.
They have time slots, right?
Time slots, yeah. So ours was from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then you got to get out and the next crew comes in. So yeah, you want to look at ventilation. The air is very humid inside an indoor pool. That's good because it means droplets and aerosols tend to hit other water particles in the air and fall to the ground.
Fall down quicker.
Yeah, and that should reduce the risk further. So thank you for that very interesting email.
The next interesting email came from Anita. She writes, hi there, I was listening to a recent SU podcast about third doses of the COVID vaccine. She said very clearly that she was not going to take a third dose, and then she referred...
Based on moral grounds, she wants other people around the world to have access to a first vaccination?
Unfortunately, she did not give a reason why or an explicit reason why, but what she did was mention a podcast that she listens to, and she says, I recommend that you listen to a very reliable virology podcast called TWIV. That's This Week in Virology. The regular contributors are virologists, immunologists, etc. They have had Christian Drosten, the Germany's top virologist, a number of times. I listened in, Anita, to two episodes. They're long. They're very long. These four hosts, the ones I watched were with Vincent Racinello, Rich Condit, Brianna Baker, and Kathy Spindler. It's very in-depth, thorough, elaborate talk about virology.
Is that a polite way of saying it's dry or possibly...
I think it's very dry and they would probably, the hosts would say that themselves, and I think they pride themselves on that.
Okay.
They take about every last detail. Like that week they were talking about the study that had come out in, or the paper that had come out in The Lancet referring to the third dose. And they spent pretty much an hour taking apart that paper.
And this was the
or just discussing
the opinion piece, effectively, from doctors around the world or of immunologists around the world saying... Look,
around the world, including very important organizations like the FDA and the WHO. They went into a lot of the people who wrote on that paper and also what was actually being said with that paper.
Yeah. And just to paraphrase for those of our listeners who didn't have a chance to listen to that podcast of ours or that broadcast of ours.
There was a very clear bottom line, they didn't recommend the third dose.
Yes.
Or the booster shot, as it's being called, of the mRNA vaccines.
There are too many people around the world who have not yet been vaccinated for us to be getting third shots and to be, you know, moderately increasing our already really good efficacy against these viruses.
The advantage that you would get, you might get from that, definitely does not outweigh the risk of not vaccinating the unvaccinated.
Of course, of course. No, and a final sort of caveat or exception there is, of course, the highly at-risk groups with immune system issues or the people who are very frail. Yes, of course. Give them a third booster shot to make sure that they have a decent amount of immunoprotection.
In the meantime, in the United States, one of the big parts of the Biden COVID strategy was boosters. And it has, at this point, it looks like it's not going to happen. It hasn't been recommended for the greater population, only for those 65 or older.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that has
interesting development there, especially with regard to the FDA and the two people on that Lancet study who are apparently going to leave the FDA over what was going to be Biden's strategy with regard to the booster shots.
Oh, that part I hadn't realized. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, thank you for the tip. We have another email out of Canada, sticking to Canada for now, from Rick and Sadie. And it was Rick and Sadie, right? That's
Rick and Sadie.
Yeah, from Rick and Sadie. And this one is a correction, correcting something that Gabe and I spoke about on an episode where we discussed this sort of crazy experiment that happened in northern Germany regarding cows and the cows urinating or
micturating?
Micturating.
I think you mean micturating.
Micturating was the new vocabulary word of the day there. Urinating in one spot. They'd been trained like a child to go potty in one spot. And as we were discussing this, I at one point mentioned the phase two part of the study, which is where if a cow left the spot or didn't go pee in the right spot, they sprayed that cow for 3 seconds with cold water.
So instead of being given molasses for urinating in the right spot, it was sprayed with cold water. And yeah. I erroneously said that that was an example of negative reinforcement. That was so wrong of me.
How could you?
And Rick and Sadie,
I believed in you.
Have come to the rescue.
No, Rick. Rick wrote a very, very generous and warm and
super nice
email saying that we got that wrong. We called that negative reinforcement. And he said, don't feel bad. I suspect that if you do a study, only 1 in 5 professional psychologists would actually get it correctly. So without going into every detail of the email, what he's basically saying is true negative reinforcement is when you are allowed to escape a negative situation. So if you're expecting a punishment like an electric shock,
and you don't get it.
And you don't have to do that because of
something that you've just done?
Yeah, you did a good behavior. Now you don't have to get the
bad
thing.
Then you would be reinforcing that behavior with a negative.
Yes. So that is that is what that means. And what we should have said in that situation is this was punishment. This was straight up punishment. These cows, if they peed in the wrong spot, were punished with a 3-second blast of cold water to the face. Up to, who knows, maybe up to 20 times a day.
And based on that punishment, they learned to urinate in the right spot.
Oh, they did. Well, 10 out of the 16 cows learned how to do it 80% of the time. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And our last email, Connor.
Oh, I like this one.
From the capital of Texas, Austin, Texas, from Cheryl Finfrock.
Southern United States.
Can I just read this one out? Hi, Gabe and Connor. First, I love your podcast and look forward to it every week. I want to refer back to a podcast about men, low voices, and attractiveness. This is research out of Germany here.
And probably, 9 months ago?
A long time ago.
A year ago we talked about this one?
A long time ago. And Cheryl wants to say here that she wanted to let us know that we have fantastic radio voices, and she is sure that our wives are pleased with the sound.
I don't know if my wife is always pleased with the sound of my voice, Cheryl, but I appreciate you assuming that she is. And actually, it kind of depends here what you mean by fantastic radio voices. If you're saying that our voices are deep and melodious,
or low with regard to the pitch,
then
that would be a horrible message for our wives, because that would mean that the likelihood that I cheat and Connor cheats goes through the roof.
That was
because that's what that research said.
That's what the research appeared to show. Men with lower voices appeared to cheat, or the data suggested that they cheated more often. We spent a lot of time trying to figure out why that would be the case. What the connection or association is, because probably not direct causation.
The researcher herself didn't know and loved talking about it, but in the end, we don't know. But the research did definitely say the lower your voice is, the more likely it is you will stray from the line.
Yeah, that's odd. One of those totally odd conclusions that we had to discuss.
But thank you, Cheryl.
Yeah, and Cheryl went on to said she appreciated the coverage of all things COVID, and wondered whether, because she'd listened to the one about anger and COVID. This was the one, if you're looking at, I don't know, Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you'll find that episode under...
Political instability.
Yeah, COVID-19's connection to political violence, effectively. And she was saying that she wonders if the way we feel right now is similar to how people feel during times of war. I've had that same thought. I've wondered the same thing, and that is kind of what that researcher implied. His name was Frederik Jørgensen
yeah. from Aarhus, Denmark. I felt that at the beginning. As time went on, that wore off big time. But that's a good question. And that would explain the agitation, the fear, the anxiety on a collective scale. That would certainly explain what Frederik Jørgensen was talking about.
Absolutely. And he was clear.
He didn't mention the word war, though.
No, just any stressor, anything that negatively impacts your life in a big way will lead to feelings of frustration and increased political agitation.
But there was one last email we wanted to talk about, but actually couldn't.
Cannot.
It was from a listener in the United States who did not want to be named. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, didn't want any information revealed at all about the email. Just one thing we will say is that we stand by our debunking of the idea that the COVID-19 vaccines cause the human body to become magnetic.
And specifically, this is a reference to many videos which happen to appear on the TikTok social media platform. It seemed like that was the place where you could find the majority of them, which appeared to show, you know, the point of injection being a spot at which suddenly you could affix a magnet to, and it would stick to your arm, or that you could attach a piece of metal to it, and the metal would suddenly stick to your arm. Again, what you're seeing in those videos is that's happening for other reasons. I could stick things to my body right now if I wanted to. Don't know if my studio technician would enjoy watching that, but it would not be the result of magnetism. It would be the result of friction or some of the fluids, I don't know, sweat coming out of the pores on my skin, causing those objects to stick. And
or Christoph Grova's hair gel seeping down onto his forehead.
Well, yes, yeah, we can finish this up and go stick things to Christoph's forehead. If any of our listeners out there have any other questions for us, as you can see, we're wide open. We really enjoy reading your emails, even if we can't read all of them on the air. Get in touch with us. We're su@dw.com.